Imagine this scenario for a moment. You're a primary care physician, and this is just a regular day at your practice. One of your longtime patients comes in and tells you she's been more tired than usual these last couple of months. She tells you her periods haven't been regular either and is already joking that menopause is awful. But she's only 35, so you get some blood work. They reveal that both her free T4 and TSH are low. You tell her that you suspect a pituitary problem that's affecting her thyroid function and that you'd like to get some more testing. Turns out the med student who's been with you has also recently been found to have low free T4 levels. However, she was told her problem was in her thyroid gland. She asks you how you know that the patient's problem isn't also in her thyroid gland. Hey, and welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Alex Dennis, and this is the brick on the structure and function of the pituitary gland. Let's jump right in. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Describe the location and gross appearance of the pituitary gland. 2. Describe the histologic appearance of the anterior and posterior lobes and list the hormones produced by each. 3. Discuss the embryologic origins of the anterior and posterior lobes. And 4. List the hypothalamic hormones that influence pituitary hormone release and describe the vascular system through which these hormones travel. In the 19th century fairy tale, The Princess and the Pea, a young woman's royal blood is confirmed by her exquisite sensitivity to a pea lying beneath 20 mattresses and another 20 eiderdown feather beds stacked on top of the mattresses. She emerges black and blue after a sleepless night from the offending pea, but of course lives happily and pealessly ever after, her princesshood incontrovertibly proven. Although it's hard to imagine that such a minuscule object could exert so much influence, in fact, our own pea-sized pituitary glands play a major role in regulating many of our vital body functions, as well as our general well-being. Part 1. What is the pituitary gland and where does it come from? Also called the master gland, the pituitary gland controls a large majority of the hormones that circulate in our bodies throughout the day. We'll begin by talking about the anatomy and histology, then cover embryology, and finish up with my favorite part, which is some of the physiology that makes the pituitary gland so special. Let's begin. The pituitary gland, also called hypophysis cerebri, hypophysis being Greek for lying under, and cerebri being cerebrum, so literally under cerebrum. This gland is roughly the size of a pea and projects anteroinferiorly to the hypothalamus. The pituitary is located just inferior to the optic chiasm, which is where the optic nerves cross, and sits on top of the cella turcica. The cella turcica, also known as Turkish shadow, is found within the sphenoid bone of the skull. More specifically, the cella turcica makes up the lowest portion of the hypophyseal fossa in the sphenoid bone, where it truly cradles the pituitary gland. Let's do a quick anatomy review before moving on. What structure holds the pituitary gland? The cella turcica holds the pituitary gland like a saddle. This is the deepest portion of the hypophyseal fossa of the sphenoid bone. The pituitary consists of two visibly distinct lobes that hang from the hypothalamus by a thin stalk called the infundibulum. The two lobes include the anterior pituitary, adenohypophysis, and the smaller posterior pituitary, neurohypophysis. The anterior pituitary is larger than its neighbor and is richly perfused with capillaries. The posterior pituitary contains the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract that extends from the hypothalamus to the posterior lobe through a portion of the infundibulum. Part 2. What does the pituitary gland look like under a microscope? We mentioned that the pituitary comprises anterior and posterior lobes. A third area called pars intermedia is located between the lobes, but this isn't very important to the mature pituitary gland. The anterior lobe can be divided based on HME staining and the hormones produced. The first breakdown, based on staining, is chromophiles versus chromophobes. Quite literally, cells that like stain, the chromophiles, will stain on HME, and chromophobes, the cells that don't like or pick up stain. Chromophiles can be broken down into hormone-producing acidophils and basophils, while chromophobes do not produce hormones. Easy, they don't stain and they don't make hormones. The names tell you that acidophils are acid-loving and look pink on HME due to eosin being pink and acidic, while basophils are base-loving and look purple on HME due to hematoxylin. One of my all-time favorite med school mnemonics is actually helpful here to remember which hormones are made by acidophils versus basophils. Have you ever heard of flat PEG? It's an acronym of the hormones made by the anterior pituitary. FSH, LH, ACTH, TSH, prolactin, endorphins, and growth hormone. Well, the P and G hormones, so prolactin and growth hormone, are made by acidophils, and the flat hormones are made by basophils. You can remember B flat. Knowing the specific cell type that makes the hormones is fairly straightforward due to their intuitive prefixes. Let's go over acidophils. Acidophils include two main hormone-producing cells, somatotrophs and mammotrophs, also known as lactotrophs. Somatotrophs produce growth hormone, GH, also called somatotropin, and mammotrophs, or lactotrophs, produce prolactin, a hormone important for milk production. Basophils, on the other hand, include gonadotrophs, corticotrophs, and thyrotrophs. Gonadotrophs produce follicle-stimulating hormone, FSH, and luteinizing hormone, LH, both of which act on the gonads. Corticotrophs, think cortisol, produce ACTH, which goes on to stimulate the adrenal glands to produce cortisol. The thyrotrophs, for thyroid, produce thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, which stimulates the thyroid. Let's check in to see what you've learned. What do acidophils of the anterior pituitary produce? Anterior pituitary acidophils are either somatotrophs or mammotrophs, and they produce GH and prolactin, respectively. All right, let's shift gears to the posterior lobe now. Unlike the anterior lobe, the posterior lobe is actually an extension of the brain and is composed primarily of nerve axons from nerve bodies in the hypothalamus. These axons travel from the hypothalamus to the posterior lobe via the hypothalamo-hypophyseal tract within the pituitary infundibulum. The nerve fibers carry oxytocin and antidiuretic hormone, ADH, vasopressin, from the nerve cell bodies at the hypothalamus, where they are made, to the nerve endings in the posterior pituitary. Here, the hormones are stored until stimulated for release. For the most part, there is little to see on cross-sections of the posterior lobe. That being said, there are noteworthy structures called herring bodies that contain eosinophilic concentrations of oxytocin and ADH that are visibly stored within the axon terminals. You can also see pituocytes, which are modified glial cells that help insulate the nerve fibers to allow for efficient and speedy conduction of impulses. It's a good idea to check out both anterior and posterior lobe sections to get a feel for what these structures look like. Alright, two questions back to back. Where are ADH and oxytocin made? Though ADH and oxytocin are released by the posterior pituitary, remember they are actually made in the hypothalamus. What are herring bodies? Herring bodies contain eosinophilic concentrations of oxytocin or ADH. These hormones concentrate within the terminals of the axons of the hypothalamic neurons running into the posterior pituitary. Part 3. How does the pituitary gland develop? Now that we understand the mature pituitary a little better, let's investigate the developing gland. The pituitary gland begins to develop during the first trimester of gestation. As the brain, or at this stage the neuroectoderm, grows, it differentiates into a series of vesicles. The most important in our discussion is the diencephalon. As the third ventricle is being formed, the posterior pituitary, or neurohypophysis, develops from an evagination of the diencephalon. This explains why the posterior lobe is composed of nervous tissue. The anterior pituitary, or adenohypophysis, develops from the outpouching of the roof of the oral ectoderm, called Rathke's pouch. Since the mouth is glandular, this explains why the anterior lobe is made of glandular tissue. It's actually really quite fascinating when you try to visualize this development, partly because it gives you an appreciation of the spatial relationship and proximity of the pituitary to the hard palate. The projecting tissue from the mouth travels upward toward the brain, while the hypothalamic tissue of the diencephalon moves downward. As the two move closer together, they eventually meet and form the early structure of the pituitary gland. In normal development, apoptosis occurs at the base of Rathke's pouch, detaching the gland from the roof of the mouth. The remaining bit of Rathke's pouch that is unchanged from the roof of the mouth makes up the pars intermedia of the pituitary. But if more of Rathke's pouch remains, i.e. parts that should apoptose but don't, a craniopharyngioma can develop. Craniopharyngiomas are rare solid cystic tumors of the brain, and though benign, these tumors can cause growth retardation in children by interfering with normal pituitary function as well as abnormal vision in adults by impinging on the optic chiasm. Half of the patients with these tumors present in childhood and adolescence, but some may not present until after 20 years old or even up to 70 or 80 years old. Let's see what you picked up from this. From which embryonic tissue does Rathke's pouch develop? Rathke's pouch originates from the ectoderm of the roof of the mouth. Part 4. What is the hypothalamic pituitary axis? Alright, on to why the pituitary is called the master gland. The hypothalamus is the regulator of pituitary hormone release and, by extension, the downstream effect of those hormones. So let's discuss some of those important endocrine pathways. We can break each axis down to 3 levels: hypothalamic hormones, pituitary hormones, and peripheral targets or endocrine glands, or the end organs, because they end the axis. Before we begin, we should clarify the terms tropic and trophic. As we know, the suffix tropy refers to control of a hormone or gland, and trophy usually indicates a change in size. Here, tropic stimulation means the hormone targets another gland to increase or decrease hormone secretion, and trophic means the target organ is stimulated to grow. Now let's look at the general pathway for pituitary stimulation. Everything begins with the hypothalamus either secreting hormone to the anterior pituitary or sending a neuronal signal to the posterior pituitary. Regardless of the method, the respective pituitary cells receive these stimuli and release a hormone in response to it. This pituitary hormone will then go on to affect the target organ or gland throughout the body. Of course, in some instances, the hypothalamic stimuli block hormone secretion in the pituitary rather than stimulate it, but we'll clarify this later. Are there a lot of hormones to remember? Sure. But fortunately for us, whoever discovered them named them based on their functions. We'll once again split up these hormones into anterior and posterior pathways, starting with the anterior one. But before we do that, let's remind ourselves, what are the hormones produced and released by the anterior pituitary? Remember that flat bag mnemonic from earlier on? It's the acronym for the anterior pituitary hormones, very important to remember. So it's FSH, LH, ACTH, TSH, then prolactin, endorphins, and growth hormone. What we're going to do now is go over each of these endocrine axes, starting with the hypothalamic hormone, then the pituitary hormone that it controls, and finally, the effector organ. Gonadotropin-releasing hormone, GnRH, stimulates the anterior pituitary gonadotrophs to secrete FSH and LH. These two hormones go on to target the ovaries and testes and have tropic and trophic responses. Corticotropin-releasing hormone, CRH, stimulates anterior pituitary corticotrophs to secrete ACTH. ACTH acts by increasing adrenal cortex secretion of cortisol and also stimulating growth and function of the adrenal cortex. Thyrotropin-releasing hormone, TRH, stimulates anterior pituitary thyrotrophs to secrete TSH. TSH will go on to trigger synthesis of the thyroid hormones and help maintain the function of the thyroid gland. All right, now on to the PEG portion. Growth hormone-releasing hormone, GHRH, stimulates anterior pituitary somatotrophs to secrete GH. GH in turn stimulates the liver to secrete insulin-like growth factor while also acting on other tissues throughout the body. Now let's introduce a bit of a twist. Somatotropin release inhibiting hormone, SRIH, is a peptide that acts on anterior pituitary somatotrophs to inhibit the secretion of GH. This can also be called somatostatin or growth hormone inhibiting hormone. And finally, dopamine is actually continuously released to inhibit anterior pituitary mammotrophs from secreting prolactin. Prolactin acts on milk-producing lobular cells in the breast tissue. This is an example of negative feedback. The last thing we should mention before moving on is that there does exist some inter-axis feedback. Like for instance, yes, dopamine inhibits prolactin secretion, but also exerts negative feedback on TSH. And somatostatin negatively regulates growth hormone, but also TSH. So that's kind of annoying because it breaks our perfect axis model, but there aren't too many instances of that. In light of what we just said, can you imagine what would happen if dopamine secretion is reduced in the vicinity of the anterior pituitary gland? Lower dopamine levels would result in decreased inhibition of prolactin secretion. As prolactin secretion increases, it will stimulate lactogenesis in the breast tissue for breastfeeding. Alright, moving on now to the posterior pituitary, which only releases two hormones. Recall the posterior pituitary receives direct neural stimulation from the hypothalamus. The neurons terminating in the posterior pituitary run from the hypothalamus, where hormones are produced, through the infundibulum to the posterior lobe, where hormones are released. Secretion of oxytocin and ADH from the posterior pituitary is dependent upon stimulation of hypothalamic neurons. During birth and delivery, oxytocin is released in the final stages of labor to increase contractions in the uterus. Oxytocin is also responsible for the milk letdown reflex that contracts the breast tissue during lactation. ADH is secreted in times of hypertonic blood or low blood pressure and acts on the kidneys and peripheral arterioles. ADH is an important factor in maintaining blood volume and blood pressure. Part 5. What is the pituitary portal system? Let's circle back now to study the capillary loops that richly perfuse the pituitary gland. Recall that the hypothalamus can send hormones to the anterior lobe to trigger further hormone secretion, or it can send hormones to the posterior lobe for storage and release. Well, the blood flow is set up in a manner that allows more circulation around the anterior lobe and less around the posterior lobe. We can first look at the origin and layout of the portal system and then at the plexuses surrounding each lobe. If you're picturing the hypothalamus and pituitary in your head, which I like to imagine as two inverted maracas, where the stalks would be the infundibulum, then the superior hypophyseal artery surrounds the stalks and the inferior hypophyseal artery originates from right under the pituitary and makes its way upward to hug the posterior lobe. Both the superior and inferior hypophyseal arteries branch off the internal carotid artery. We said the superior hypophyseal artery feeds the infundibulum of the pituitary gland. Here, arterial capillaries from the superior hypophyseal artery meet the venous capillaries wrapping around the anterior lobe. In contrast, the inferior hypophyseal artery supplies the posterior lobe only. This simple layout accommodates the different method of hormone transmission between the anterior and posterior lobe. What two arteries of the internal carotid feed the pituitary gland? The superior hypophyseal artery and the inferior hypophyseal artery feed the pituitary gland. The superior hypophyseal artery forms the primary capillary system that feeds the anterior pituitary, while the inferior branch feeds the posterior pituitary. The key to understanding the pituitary portal circulation is remembering that the gland is constantly secreting hormones. This requires a lot of mesh-like capillaries to carry all of the hormones from the secreting cells. To accomplish this, the superior hypophyseal artery forms the primary plexus around the infundibulum, as well as the secondary plexus in the anterior lobe. The inferior hypophyseal artery forms its own separate capillary plexus only in the posterior lobe. For the anterior lobe, arterial blood in the primary plexus is circulated around the short multiple neurons of the hypothalamus at the median eminence. Hypothalamic hormones can enter the circulation and exit down the capillary system to the secondary plexus within the anterior lobe. The secondary plexus is often viewed as venous because it carries blood away from the hypothalamus. At this point, hypothalamic hormones diffuse into the anterior lobe and trigger anterior pituitary hormone release. Pituitary hormones can then freely diffuse back into the secondary plexus and subsequent veins to serve their function elsewhere. On the other hand, for the posterior lobe, the capillary plexus is solely located in the posterior lobe so that long hypothalamic neurons can trigger release of ADH and oxytocin directly into the capillary bed. These hormones are then circulated into the venous blood system to the rest of the body. Alrighty, we made it! Now let's recap what we've gone through in this audio break. Where is the pituitary gland located? The pituitary gland protrudes from the hypothalamus and is cradled by the cella turcica. What is the histologic appearance of the anterior lobe? The anterior pituitary has three visible cells on H&E stain. Pink acidophils that produce GH and prolactin, purple-blue basophils that produce TSH, FSH, LH, ACTH, and alpha-MSH, and non-staining chromophobes that support the other cells. Now, same question for the posterior lobe. What is its histologic appearance? The posterior pituitary is composed of neural tissue. Under the microscope, the only visible structures are Herring bodies containing oxytocin and ADH, and pituicytes that help insulate the nerve axons. What are the embryologic origins of the anterior and posterior lobes? The pituitary gland is formed during early gestation by the fusion of an ectoderm protrusion from the roof of the mouth, which is Bradykin's bulge, with neuroectoderm protruding from the hypothalamic tissue of the diencephalon. The mouth ectoderm tissue forms the anterior pituitary, while the neuroectoderm tissue surrounding the third ventricle of the brain forms the posterior pituitary. What is the major way in which hypothalamic control over anterior and posterior pituitary hormone release differ? The hypothalamus tightly regulates the secretions from the pituitary through short neuron hormonal signals to the anterior pituitary and stored hormones from long neurons projecting into the posterior pituitary. What are the hypothalamic hormones that influence pituitary hormone release? The key hypothalamic hormone axes are GnRH that stimulates FSH and LH secretion, GHRH that stimulates GH secretion, SRIH that stimulates somatostatin secretion, TRH that stimulates TSH secretion, CRH that stimulates ACTH and alpha MSH secretion, and dopamine that inhibits prolactin secretion. What is the vascular system through which the hypothalamic hormones travel to the anterior pituitary? The superior hypophyseal artery supplies blood to the median eminence, where hypothalamic neurons release regulatory hormones that are carried from the primary venous plexus to the secondary capillaries that directly feed the glands of the anterior pituitary. And what artery supplies blood to the posterior pituitary? The inferior hypophyseal artery supplies blood to the posterior pituitary. Armed with our newfound knowledge, let's revisit our case from earlier. You just told your patient that you think she has a pituitary problem interfering with her thyroid function after seeing that she has low free T4 and TSH levels. The med student who's been with you has also recently been found to have low free T4 levels, but she was told that her problem was in her thyroid gland. She asks how you know that the patient's problem is located in her pituitary gland instead. What do you tell her? You tell her that TSH is made by the pituitary and should increase when thyroid function is low. Her pituitary is doing what it should, cranking out more TSH to stimulate the thyroid. That indicates that the hypothalamus pituitary part of the system is okay and her problem is in her thyroid. But if the TSH isn't increased, that means that the pituitary gland isn't doing what is expected. She then asks if that's why we check TSH to decide if the dose is right, which you confirm, adding that in your patient's case, we'll have to monitor the T4 itself. You thank her for her great questions and encourage her to keep being this inquisitive as she goes through medical school. And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, mnemonics, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time.